and line forms on the right page. Not that Maggie's back in town. Look out, old Maggie is back.
Chris McMichael.
On the fan, McMonagle here with you, rocking with you till 5 a.m. You know the deal. 3 hours, 877-337-6666. Fleegs on the other side, and we're taking your phone calls till 5 a.m. and the warm-up show right here on the fan. And listen, I'm annoyed as a baseball fan. We'll get to all the stuff that makes us happy as we get ready for hopefully what will be a victorious Game 5 for the New York Knicks, ending that series. Hopefully what will be a victorious Game 5 for the Islanders, who will push the Carolina Hurricanes a little bit further. That's a selfish Rangers take. But hey, maybe the Islanders can win this whole thing. But let's focus on our two lousy offensive baseball teams, because if you look at these two teams last night, it's kind of similar fashion. There's other talking points, there's things to get to, but ultimately, these offenses stink. The Yankees shut out again for the fifth time this season already. After scoring 30 runs over two games in Milwaukee, they go on into Baltimore to take on what now has become clearly the other best team in this division that they're going to be battling with for first place all year long, and do absolutely nothing. And the New York Mets ruin a gem. An absolute gem. No hit through seven innings. Luis Severino. And normally you could take a look and say, hey, you know what? That's probably the takeaway from this game. Look how good Luis Severino's been. Besides maybe, you know, one inning in his last start and maybe his first start of the year. Luis Severino throwing fastballs by people and fastball counts. Throwing his secondary pitches for strikes. Great movement. Looking great. Back-to-back starts in this new era of baseball. Are you kidding me? Back-to-back starts where the starter goes eight innings and allows your bullpen to get a break, even though you have seen Diaz now in back-to-back games. And unfortunately, what happened last night, he gives up the two-run home run. But man, oh man, we could talk about everything else. And yes, Wendell has his head up as you know what. Right? Because we'll get into the game here, but they're playing the Cubs clearly. Severino has a no-hitter through seven innings, and in the eighth, gives up a walk, has a base hit, a fielder's choice, and they have runners at the corners with one out, and in comes Joey Wendell, who was brought in to play defense for this team. And when you look at the roster of this team, and there's going to have to be discussions, and we'll get into it, 877-337-6666. We could talk about the roster of this team and what do you do with Vientos and where does the roster, you know, once Marte comes back and they're expecting him back later today, what do you do with this roster? But make no mistake, Wendell's going nowhere. Wendell is your only backup utility infielder, your backup shortstop. You need that position on the roster. And right now, there isn't another man on the team, on the 40-man. Now, that could change if they really feel this poorly about Wendell. But he's going to be here. And if you are going to play Vientos, which I think they will. I know he went 0-for-4 in this game, but he hit a ball pretty deep in one of his at-bats. And ultimately, you know, 3-for-4 prior to today with the home run, the walk-off home run the other day. If he's going to stay into this roster, you are going to put Wendell in the exact situation you put him in this game. Defense late in the game. That's why he's on this team. And there's a couple of guys, and I've talked about it, there's a couple of guys on this roster where if they don't do the one thing they need to do, they're kind of useless. And on different levels, Jeff McNeil is one, and he got a hit in this game, one of the few. But if Jeff McNeil doesn't hit 315 to 330, Jeff McNeil has no use. He has a little bit of versatility defensively, but he's not really good anywhere. He hits for no power. He doesn't get on base. He's a 310, 315, you know, contend for the batting title type player. Otherwise, he's useless. And Wendell, if he doesn't play solid defense, if he isn't someone you can trust putting in late defensively, especially at third, especially now Vientos is going to play. We know Beatty has kind of played well, or at least much better than he had previous years at third base defensively, and he had that unbelievable series, which I guess is close to a month ago now, but in Cincinnati, but has played relatively well at third base. But Wendell's brought in to be your backup defender, get a couple of at-bats here or there, but ultimately be a guy you can plug in and feel confident at third base. And he has the terrible game, I believe it was in L.A., where he's throwing balls all over the place. And then last night, with a one-run lead, and that is the story, how terrible the offense was. You get the leadoff homer from Nimmo, and you expect this offense to do something. To do something. But absolutely nothing. Lindor, 0 for 4 again, back under 200. Alonso, nothing. He's hitting 240. He's giving you some pop, don't get me wrong. But he's still, you know, at 240 in the home runs, he's a, you know, he's a pretty good, useful player. You need it to be more like 260, 270. But he's hitting 240. JD Martinez has come in and done a nice job. I just told you about McNeil. Vientos, we'll see. And really, if it wasn't for a Bader single, right? If you want to look back over the last four games, as now you find yourself as the Mets back to 400 again, 500 again, excuse me. If it wasn't for a Bader single in that last game again with two outs and two strikes against St. Louis and then the Vientos heroics, you are looking at four straight losses in a row and this offense doing absolutely nothing. But you get to the eighth inning, you have Severino absolutely dealing first and third with a quick runner at the plate who hits a, you know, Madrigal who can run, hits a broken bat ground ball to your third baseman who you brought in for defense, and he goes straight to second base instead of clearly having, which he would have had, the runner at home. That's not a ball off the glove. That is not a physical error. That is a mental error from who is supposed to be the one guy you trust to put in late game situations. That's what he's here for. And he, when you watch it, if you've seen baseball enough, you know the likelihood of a double play there is absolutely slim to none. And he has got to be smarter. And you cannot allow that score to be tied on that. You have got to trust. Going into that at-bat, you have got to say to yourself, unless this is an absolute missile hit to me, I have to do the one thing I have to do. And that's make sure I protect this lead and give Severino, who again was given an opportunity to go past, you know, what I think most guys would have expected for him to go after he gives up the hit. I thought the first sign of trouble they would have went to the bullpen, and Mendy is showing you in back-to-back appearances here, whether it's Quintana and now Severino, his trust in this rotation and his ability to trust his players and his starting pitchers who've been great for him. They leave Severino in. You have got to give Severino an opportunity to get that last out without that run scoring. And instead, you can tell he has it in his mind that he is going for a double play. It's stupid baseball. And that's what's frustrating. Because you know what? When you're swinging the bats the way you are, you can't play dumb baseball. And that's a talking point, and everybody's going to go nuts about it, and we can at 877-337-6666. It's a dumb play. We'll talk about whether or not he should be on the team. I'm sure everybody wants him designated for assignment. It's never going to happen because he's your utility infielder and your one backup shortstop. He's going nowhere. But ultimately, it's this Met offense that is wildly inconsistent. And when you look at it, I'm sorry, I know Marte's not there at the moment, and Marte has been a steadying force. But this offense has too many damn good hitters, and it's been too long now to consistently have games like this. I mean, consistently scoring 1-2 runs. Like, they get that home run from Nimmo to start the game. They should be off to the races on some level. And they get absolutely nothing. And it starts with Lindor and Nimmo. And Alonso. Lindor is slugging 363. I understand he's been hot. I understand he's hit some home at times. I understand he's hit some home runs. He's had his games where he's popped up, and you feel like, oh, he's starting to show the worm is turned. His left-handed at-bats are much better. You know, multi-home runs from the left-handed side. And yet, and, you know, he'll be fine once he gets, you know, the season. I have no fear about what Lindor is going to be and blah, blah, blah. And that's true. At the end of the year, I still probably have no doubt that he'll be somewhat near his baseball card. But this offense is just wildly inconsistent, and while they're going poorly, he never seems to come through. And it's frustrating to watch now. You're seeing the pitching performances by this team and what this rotation has done without Senga, who you got some good news on, and hopefully he sounds pretty confident that he's going to be able to come back and, you know, right around the May 27th timeline for him, somewhere around a month. And you'll see what you actually get from him. But besides, you know, a couple of standouts, and, you know, maybe Hauser, but Buddo, besides his last start, I feel like has done a really nice job. Severino's throwing the ball excellent. Quintana's coming off an 8-inning performance. You're getting good pitching performances, for the most part, not going too deep, besides the last two outings. But your pitching's been good. The bullpen has been unbelievable. You got Reed, who's been one of the storylines of all of baseball. You know what you've got in Diaz. I know his fastball is down a little bit. He gives up the home run in this game, but it's going to happen. He's not going to be perfect, but he's one of the best closers in all of baseball, if not the best closer in all of baseball. Ottavino has been great throwing strikes, and you've been getting a lot of the things that you were concerned about, the rotation, you know, a lot of these concerns that you had as a team have kind of been okay, and yet this offense that you're supposed to have faith in, especially in the middle of this order, are killing you. And it's the same thing with the New York Yankees. And the New York Yankees in this offense, and sure, listen, I was the first one to tell you that I was pleased. How could you not be? Scoring 30 runs against Milwaukee. And they went into Milwaukee against a team that's in first place in that division, playing very well, and they absolutely pounded them. Pounded them. And Judge hit multiple home runs in that series. Rizzo was player of the week and hit multiple home runs and has been hot over his last couple of games. You've seen a bunch of different guys break out. Even Gleyber Torres, who had a couple hits in this game, is starting to snap out of it. They lose Verdugo to... he's going to go be a father. Congratulations to him. Terrible timing, but what can you do? I don't hear anyone get on him. But he's away from the team. They have to play Judge in left field for his first start of his career. And they get a good pitching performance from Clark Schmidt. But this offense has just been feast or famine. And Judge has come up with... Judge comes up in a spot with runners on the corners with an opportunity to drive in a run. Can't do it. And the talking point coming out of this game, and I know what it's going to be, and I understand it, Giancarlo Stanton is a real problem running the bases. There's just no way around it. I mean, I understand he's a DH, and I understand, hey, listen, Big Poppy couldn't run the bases either. Yeah, but Big Poppy would hit 330 and hit 45 home runs and be an offensive real threat. And while he's been okay, he's nothing like that. And I don't know how many times I can count on one hand the amount of times I've seen a base hit be taken away by a force at second base. And that's what we saw from Giancarlo Stanton last night. Now, I don't think it's so much about his speed as it was a terrible read and going all the way practically back to first base instead of standing still and then moving on. Going all the way back to first probably cost him. But we've seen him try and beat out an infield single where he hardly runs. We've seen him round third base and come home at a snail's pace. Now we've seen him take away a base hit from Wells by being thrown out at a forced play at second base. He is absolutely unathletic, station to station, and unless he's going to smash and hit home runs, there's another guy to go along with Jeff McNeil, to go along with Wendell. He's got one thing to do. And if he can't do it, he's useless because nothing else of his game has... forget playing the field. And I understand they have a lot of outfielders, and last year they needed him to play the outfield much more than they need him to right now, but you can forget that. He can barely move. I thought we were past it. I thought he was running better. I thought he was in better shape. But right now, you can tell Giancarlo Stanton is completely in stay healthy mode, and he is not going to bust it for anything because he's afraid of pulling a muscle or whatever. But he is an absolute out on the base paths. There is nothing that can't happen. I mean, he could hit a single to left field and be thrown out at first base. It's a disaster. And this was a big game for this Yankee team. And Clark Schmidt, much like the Mets, gives up a home run in the first batter. Gunnar Henderson hits a home run in this game to lead off the game. And then Clark Schmidt goes about his business, and he's been great. And this starting rotation, Rodon, I mean, it's very similar to the Mets, what's going on right now. Rodon, Nestor Cortez, Clark Schmidt, like all these guys are pitching well. This rotation doesn't go deep into games necessarily, and you rely on your bullpen, and that's a problem for the Yankees right now, but this rotation's been good. And if you look at it, this team has been awful. I think I saw the stat that they are 0-8 when they score two runs, obviously tied for the worst record in baseball. And they are 19-3 when they score three runs or more, the best record in baseball. All they have to do is score three runs, and they're the best team in baseball, and they've been shut out five times and have scored two or less eight times in this short season, and they have Juan Soto being an MVP candidate. It's unacceptable from the rest of this lineup, and it falls mainly at Aaron Judge's feet. And he had a couple of good days in Milwaukee, but he is not out of the woods. He gets a single in this game. He hit a couple of fly balls right to the wall. I do think the worm is starting to turn with him. But this offense, both these offenses, are too damn good to have them ruin practically no-hit performances, ruin great performances from Clark Schmidt against their divisional rival, and to practically cause a four-game losing streak, if not for one heroics by Bader and by Vientos in the final game of the St. Louis series. Both of these offenses are dragging our baseball teams down. And they're too veteran-laden, and they're too damn good to have it happen. And they got to figure something out. And the stars of this team, and we could talk about, you know, the different plays, and we could talk about the talking points of Stanton on the base path, which is clearly a problem. We could talk about Wendell not making the right play. We could talk about all the different things that come on these games. Every game has its own unique story. We get that. But overall, the problem with these two teams is the offense, and you can lay it at the feet of their stars. Gleyber Torres is supposed to be one of the best hitters on the Yankees. He's done nothing. Pete Alonso is supposed to help carry this team. He hasn't done enough. Aaron Judge is the best hitter in baseball and the driving force of this Yankee offense, and he hasn't done enough. And Lindor is supposed to be your best hitter in the middle of the lineup, and he has been brutally bad. Besides a handful of situations. And they've getting enough from their pitching. They're getting enough from their bullpen. And this offense is dragging them down. And it's unacceptable. Especially when we're so pumped up about our basketball teams and our hockey teams. So let's get it going, baseball.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung on.
There it goes. Deep left. It is high. It is far. It is gone. Number 62 to set the new American League record.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 226. McMonagle here with you. 877-337-6666. Frustrated by our two baseball teams on a Tuesday morning. And for the Yankees against the Orioles, that is going to be, you know, these games are important. These games are very important. Which makes me laugh, you know, because another talking point of the game is, and I'm reading it now on Twitter, Aaron Boone's decision with Clay Holmes in this game. And, you know, everybody playing the game of, well, on Friday night against Milwaukee with a lead, he couldn't bring back Clay Holmes to pitch another inning to save that game. And yet tonight, losing effort, he comes in to get the final out of the ninth inning. It doesn't make any sense. Or the eighth inning, excuse me. It doesn't make any sense. So he won't use him then, but he'll use him now. I don't get it. Well, a couple things. First, you're not wrong about him not being willing to use him on Friday. I screamed about it yesterday. I thought in all the years of Aaron Boone, besides obviously maybe taking out Garcia to bring in J.A. Happ in game two of the ALDS in 2020, I don't know if I've ever been more frustrated or puzzled by an Aaron Boone decision than I was Friday night bringing in Tonkin into that game. It made absolutely no sense. I would have brought back out Clay Holmes, but if you don't want to do up-downs with him and bring him in for two innings, I understand on some level, I guess, but you can't go there. And I know they didn't have you could argue how many options they had. I don't care. You can't bring in a guy you just brought in who's been released three different times by two different teams. You can't do it. Not in that spot. But the difference is, one, he'd already pitched an inning in that game. They didn't want to bring him out. And two, and I find it laughable that we get mad about it. And instead of saying, okay, good, use Clay Holmes in a game against the Baltimore Orioles to keep it a one-run deficit, because I want to try and come back and beat the Baltimore Orioles because this game might be more important than a game against Milwaukee. And maybe the pitching situation is different and how many times he's thrown, or maybe how Clay Holmes feels and you don't know it because you're not there with the team. But instead, this is what makes, instead of going, good, I like the urgency. These games are important. I want to make sure we can keep this game at one and try and win it. That's not how we handle it. We look at it and go, well, what about 3 weeks ago when you didn't do it then? Why? How come you could do it then? You can't do it now. Yeah. Do you want the urgency or not? And if you're not going to get it every time, maybe would you rather see urgency against the Milwaukee Brewers, or would you rather see urgency against the Baltimore Orioles? Now, I agree that they should have brought back out Holmes or at least went to a different reliever in that Friday night game to secure a victory, and that they're losing in this game against Baltimore, and ultimately it didn't matter because they didn't score any runs. I get it. But this team has shown a different edge and a different urgency. And instead of saying, you know what, I like it. I like bringing in Clay Holmes to make sure this stays a one-run deficit. You go back to every other situation that it wasn't done and make it about Aaron Boone. This is what we do. This is what we do. And even if you can make a logical point, even if you can point to one thing and then the other and say these two things aren't the same, we don't have the same information he does about his team, how comfortable he is in that moment, and bringing him out for a second inning is different than bringing him into this game for one out. But that's how it is. We're so frustrated by a team that's now 19-11 and tied for first place that we get hung up on what he previously did instead of just saying, okay, I like this one. Focus on the offense not scoring any runs. They've played 30 games. The New York Yankees have played 30 games. They've been shut out 5 times. That's crazy. That's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. And last night, to take Clark Schmidt and allow him to go 5 2/3 and give up one run and just the solo home run in the first inning against this talented Orioles lineup, that's an excellent job. And it's ruined. John in Hoboken. What's up, John?
How you doing, my friend?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. Hey, Aaron Judge, like, I'm going to make a comparison. He's world-class. I imagine he has that oblique and that mid-body core injury. That's too much. You got to give him a chance to recover. But suffer me this.
Mm-hmm.
How many major leaguers, if you're a GM, you're like, that guy's pyrite. He's fool's gold. I thought Carmelo Anthony was a perfect example. Guys can feast on regular season pitching, but when it comes down to facing a Roger Clemens or a Verlander, they can hit 50 home runs, but you know they're done. That's what I think of Alonso.
That's what you think of Alonso or Judge?
No, not Judge. Judge is what, but Alonso. In the World Series, you bring a guy who throws a slider down and out, he's dead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a bit overdone. I think that's a bit overdone. Everybody likes to say that. And you could point to a million guys, some of the best names you've ever heard in your life, and point to a couple of handful of situations in big moments where they weren't any good. I mean, that's just, you know, I don't want to go through them all, but we know the names, right? Willie Mays wasn't a great postseason player. Ted Williams made it to one World Series and was awful. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. You think Alonso can't hit good pitching? Oh, well, the problem is right now he's struggling. The problem right now is he's hitting 240. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like Alonso's been terrible. He hasn't. He's hit some home runs. You know, 240 is not 210. But it's just he hasn't impacted the offense enough. And too many nights like last night where this offense does nothing. But no, I don't think Alonso can hit in the postseason. I don't think Alonso can hit against good pitching. You mentioned Roger Clemens. Roger Clemens won 7 Cy Youngs. A lot of people can't hit Roger Clemens. A lot of people can't hit Justin Verlander. That's what makes them special. I don't think Alonso's fool's gold. I think Alonso's one of the premier sluggers in all of baseball. Can he be pitched to? Of course he can. I would say that most hitters, all, you know, this side of Babe Ruth and you know, early 2000 Barry Bonds, all hitters can be pitched to. If you execute your pitches, yes. If a great pitcher comes in and throws high 90 fastballs on the top of the zone inside and then throws dynamic breaking pitches low and away, they're going to get out Pete Alonso. He's also going to get out everybody else on the team. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on this morning, Dunn? How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. Yeah, I heard everything in the open, man. Definitely on point with you, and I agree with you. But, you know, a couple of things I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to talk some Yankees and some Knicks with you. Tiny, tiny Knicks, but really
That's
Yankees.
Fine. Let's talk Knicks. That's cool.
All right. So, but the Yankees, though, you know, I don't want you to think that I'm disagreeing with you because I agree with what you said. You know, with the names that we have in the middle of our order, you know, nights like this when you get, you know, shut out and stuff like that, it's a concern.
Mm-hmm.
But one perspective that I have and something that I have an issue with, especially with the fact that we've been shut out as many times as we have, and especially with the fact that it was only 2 runs that they won the game with today, mm-hmm. and especially with the fact that Schmidt put out the effort that he did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, early in the season, right, one of the hallmarks of what we were talking about early in the season when we took the big jump, when we were still waiting for a judge to wake up, when we were still trying to figure out what was going on with Rizzo and some of the other big names and big hitters in the team. The one thing, and you know, congratulations to Verdugo. I hope the fact that he's gone for a few days or a week or so with his paternal leave, because he deserves that. Congratulations to you, my brother. But the fact that he's not in a lineup, I hope it doesn't mean that we don't get the things that we were getting early in the season when we were manufacturing runs and we were doing things like getting the fly there. Because there were too many times this game that we started off innings with runners on. And, you know, and I'm not going to question the urgency because I even saw heard Grisham do things like, you know, the bunt single and all that stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to question the approach or the urgency and things of that nature. But I feel like I thought we had kind of turned that corner and we had gotten back to the point where we could win whatever kind of game is put in front of us. If it's something where it's a slugfest and we got it going that night, we do that. If it's something where we got to, you know, we're desperate for runs. We're facing a pitcher that we feel like we can't hit or we're struggling against. We can still manufacture them if the opportunities come up. That concerns me. That's a problem for me. And I feel like, you know, while, you know, because you know me, as long as the series is, you know, a chance where, like, you know, we lose a game, but we still have a chance to win the series, or in this case, you know, the split is still viable, I'm always for, like, okay, let's see how they respond. Let's see how they respond. But this has happened a couple of times now, or a few times now, and it's starting to just be a little bit concerned. Because I don't want it to be where we have, like, a couple of days like we did Saturday and Sunday, and we forget the fact that we have people on our roster that we can do things like we did early in the season, like I said, to manufacture runs and to push people over to the next base and to get people home, you know, with 1 out or 2 outs or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything's changed other than, and it's not like the style of, like you mentioned, when they manufactured runs, they weren't, those runs weren't manufactured by bunts or anything like that. They had a couple sacrifice flies, you know,
yeah,
they did.
Yeah,
they just haven't come through. Judge had an opportunity yesterday to come through with a runner on third and hit a sacrifice fly. He struck out.
I only say that because, you know, I remembered when that was going on early, hearing things like, you know, okay, we got people on the squad now Verdugo's a nice addition because Verdugo knows how to put a ball in the air and get somebody over or get somebody home. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm saying that, because I feel like, you know, I don't want to lose it. I know we have it in us to be able to do it, because I've seen us do it already this season. Not once, not twice. And while some of the times it was tackle runs, there were still other times when we grinded out games and we were doing it. So I know we can do it. I just don't want us to lose track of that. You understand? I want us to keep our versatility.
Yeah, of course.
And to get to the Knicks real quick, I'm not, because I already told you how I feel about tomorrow night's game. You know what I'm saying? We need to come out. And you know, at this point, it's like kind of like, you know, that cliche with the wolf in the corner that's, you know, already losing the fight and he's battled. And this is like the final nail that you got to put in the coffin, and they're going to come out that much harder and try to scrap and scrape at you and do everything. But we got to, you know, prevail over that, because I really like the idea of taking this next game and not even giving it a chance. But I just want to throw this out there, all right? Because you know me, Mac. The ceiling, I feel like, there is no ceiling right now until we hit it. I think that as far as we go, we can keep going. So I don't want to get, like, away from the current events and what's happening right now.
Yeah, no, you got to focus on
But I just want to put this name out there, because I said it to you before, and then I clarified it one night. The same night that we had the conversation about it and I clarified it, the kid went out and put up 50, and this was before the postseason even started. And since the postseason has hit, the boy has been just lighting it up. I'm going to say it again, okay? And this includes the current roster that we have, and that includes Julius. That kid, Anthony Edwards, when all of this is said and done, and we start moving through into next season, that draft capital and any kind of, you know, dispensable person that's towards the end of that bench that stays away from that 8, 9, maybe 10 man, if you want to go that far, rotation that we have, that is the kid that I need to see, because that's the final piece in what I believe is my complete team. Have a good morning, Mike. I'll talk
you got
to
it, buddy. I appreciate it. I mean, Anthony Edwards is an emerging superstar. They just swept away the Phoenix Suns. They're having a great year. He's not going any. The Knicks aren't getting Anthony Edwards. Like, you have to look. Like, I thought, if you look at it, right now the name for the Knicks moving forward, which, again, I think you are right, I don't want to talk about next year necessarily, but we've heard Booker. Right? Because what happened in Phoenix is an out-and-out disaster with those big three players. It sounds like Leon Rose has been on Booker for a long time and likes him a lot and would be the Knicks' number one target. We've heard that before. And you got Stephen A. Smith coming out, take it for what it's worth. He admits fully that he didn't speak to Booker, but has heard that Booker wants to come to New York. That's the guy right now that the Knicks probably would be looking to target. Anthony Edwards isn't going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. He's 22 years old. He's playing great. The Timberwolves have, you know, had a great year and are emerging as one of the better teams in the Western Conference. They're not getting rid of him. You can pie in the sky all you want. It's not happening. And I'm not focused on next year's Knicks. I'm focused on this year's Knicks. I'm not even focused on the next series. I'm not even going to look at the Porzingis injury. I'm not even going to get my hopes up that Porzingis, and I shouldn't say hopes up because I'm not rooting for anyone to be injured. But I'm not going to think about how the Boston Celtics could be without Porzingis moving forward throughout the playoffs, as he left last night's win over Miami with a tweaked hamstring or a calf muscle. And I think they've ruled out Achilles, but hey, he could have a tweaked calf. We've seen guys miss time with that. I'm not looking forward to the idea that the Indiana Pacers could be next and that the Knicks are going to be favored in that series and should absolutely win it. I'm talking about this game tonight. And make no mistake, I don't care where this game is being played. The hardest win to get is the final one. And while I do think on some levels Philadelphia is defeated, and while I do think it's embarrassing that the Knicks fan took over the building, the idea that they've given the Knicks their best shot and are still down 3-1, that Embiid's played the way he's been able to play, and Maxey has played the way he's played, and yet still they are down 3-1, and that in the critical moments, the Knicks do everything better than the 76ers. And I think they're a mentally soft team. I think they've proved that long before the series ever started. And I do think there's an element that you could see if the Knicks could finally get out to a big start, which I do think would be something I would focus on a little bit. If I'm Tibbs, if I'm this Knicks team, and not allowed it, you know, they're down 10 points in the first quarter of almost every single one of these games. Now, they've won 3 out of 4, so it's not something to complain about, but if you want to jump out on a team that could be on its last legs, if you want to put away a 76ers team that might be feeling sorry for themselves and might be mentally finished, and Embiid, who's already getting on the fans, who's been dealing with his knee, who are looking at a 3-1 deficit, playing in this building, that they were unable to get wins, even when they're up 5 points with 40 seconds left. Like, if you want to put this team away, jump out to an early lead and make them feel like it's over. Don't give them an opportunity to have the same storyline that's been over the first handful of these games where they're up 12, 13 points, you know, with 4 minutes left in the second quarter before the Knicks turn it into a 7-point deficit and then go about business in the third and fourth quarter. Like, change that narrative and jump out to the early lead. Get the early play. Get the better of the early play. That's what I would look for. The one thing I'd want to change. Now, look, all everything else, you want to keep the same. Keep rebounding. Keep defending. You know, Embiid, especially early on in the games, particularly, has gotten off to these good starts before the game starts to wear on him and the minutes mount. You expect him to get out to a good start. You know that's going to happen. You know what Maxey's capable of. The other role players hopefully play as poorly as they did the first two games in the Garden. And, you know, you got to try and get out to a better start. You got to try and get out to a better start. Brunson really, game four is really the only game where he got off to a good start. Even though he ended up with, 39 points in game four in the losing effort, he didn't really get off to that good start. He played well in game four. And you need some other, DiVincenzo, if those threes can start falling, if Hart can, you know, get his offensive game a little bit early on, if Hartenstein can hit some of those floaters and you get up to an early lead, maybe you put this 76ers team to bed. Maybe you get them thinking, what's the point? Because I do think they're capable of feeling that way. I do think they're capable of being put to rest here. And with that building and the momentum it's built even while it went to Philadelphia, and yeah, I mean, I would think that had some sort of feeling on this team that it's too much to overcome and you can't give them hope. But I'm not focused on the Pacers. I'm not focused on the Celtics. I'm not focused on certainly next year, and I'm certainly not focused on Anthony Edwards. Anybody else you want? I'm focused on this game tonight. Close out this series tonight, because I'll tell you, I'll be totally honest with you, as confident as I am in this Knicks team, and as confident I am in this game, and as confident as I am in this series, you do not want to go back to Philadelphia. Because I don't know how the fan is feeling in Philadelphia, but I would have to think they're probably embarrassed. The team called them out. I'm sure some circles of sports radio is either killing the team and or killing the fans, but they might be embarrassed. And if this 76ers team gets off the deck and wins a game in the Garden, which they were incapable of doing the first two, and send this series back to Philadelphia, maybe, just maybe, you get a raucous crowd there. Maybe, just maybe, a fan base in a city who's felt embarrassed over the last handful of games decides to show up in a different way, and you do not want to experience that. I think the Knicks are more than capable of winning that game, don't get me wrong, but who needs it? Who needs it? End this game tonight. This is a very important game. I know that's obvious, but up 3-1, end it now. Because these series, we've seen it, these series turn on a dime. And I do not want to breathe any life or give any momentum to this 76ers team to win a game in this building. I don't. This is an enormous game. They have to end it now. And yes, let's be fair, we can dream about it for a second. The road is so much more plausible to get to an NBA Finals than we could have ever expected. It is. And the way they're playing and how gritty and tough this team is and how they defend and how they rebound and how they do what they do and how, you know, what we've talked about with Tibbs and how well conditioned the team is. Like, I think he's completely vindicated in any talk, and we'll see how the series goes on and how this team goes on through the playoffs, hopefully getting through this 76ers series. But all the people who complain about the minutes, I raise my hand. All the people who complain about how much they play, how much time, how many minutes Hart has got since Randall's been down, how many minutes Brunson has gotten, especially since Randall went down, how much time, you know, you got OG Anunoby holding his elbow, screaming in pain, still stays in the game. Like, he has pushed this team. They have played massive minutes. They do have, you know, a 7, 8, 9 rotation over the course of the regular season, not so much in the postseason, but still, major minutes for their players. And yet, they look the more conditioned team. They look like the hungrier team. They're the team getting the offensive rebounds. They're the team getting the loose balls. They're the teams closing out defenders and getting block shots. They're the team doing all the things that a well-conditioned, tough team do. And that's got to continue past this series. And right now, Tibbs looks like the man who's pushing all the right buttons. He makes the defensive adjustments. He's got his team playing, you know, inspired basketball. He's out-coached Nick Nurse. There's no doubt about it. And they've out-toughed and out-hustled this team. And it's got to continue tonight. And this series has to be over. Nobody wants any part of going back to Philadelphia. And even though ultimately you have the net of a Game 7 in this building that I couldn't imagine them losing, who the hell wants that? They got to go out and take this game tonight. It's a huge game. Right, Rocco?
C-Mac, how are you doing, my friend?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Yeah, nice. Enjoying the storm up here. We're having thunder, lightning, hail. We just had hail come down.
You had hail come down out in Saratoga?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was hailing. I think it finally let up. I said, hey, I hope they didn't do any damage to my mansion here.
Yeah, hopefully not. Go out and check the damage report. Go out and make sure all your Joe Willie Namath memorabilia is
oh great. Yeah, don't know. See, Matt,
that's under lock and key.
I picked up a couple of DiMaggio autographs, 2001 pinstripe, whatever, Upper Deck. They made 5 of them, and one of them is really cool because they have a piece of his bat in the NY Yankee symbol, and plus they have a cut of a check of his, Joseph DiMaggio, because legally you have to sign checks, you know, in your full name.
Right.
It's Joseph DiMaggio.
Did you get it from Mr. Coffee?
Yeah, Mr. Coffee.
Is that where the check came from?
One's a blue check and one's a yellow check. So I don't know what he wrote them out for, but they have the cut, the nice cards. They made 5 different ones back in 2001. I own 3 of the 5.
Now. Look at you.
I own 3 of the 5.
Look at you. You are quite the
man. I got to come.
I got to come up there. Check out your memorabilia. Go take me out on the town. I got to go check out Saratoga.
Absolutely. You have to go and get a $12 shrimp.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's now $15.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. Inflation. And I mean, yeah. And all of a sudden, gas sprung up 40 cents on me over the last 3 weeks. Jeez. It's tough getting into this building.
I bet. Yeah, you drive for this.
I know.
Are you going to be subjected to that new tax if you drive into Manhattan? You know.
Yeah, I know the new congestion tax.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be on the way home. I think the hours coming in aren't applicable. I think I think I might just catch it on the way home. I got to see
in the morning.
I got to look into it. Yeah, going in. I think I'm fine. I think there's
That's
a chance,
nuts.
But it is because I'm so close to I'm so close to the tunnel. Like I don't think never mind. I don't want to get into that. But yes, I got to look into it. But there's a chance I'm affected by the congestion tax.
Yeah, that's crazy. A lot of people aren't going to come into Manhattan. They're going to say, "Hey, I heard that if you're from Jersey and you go a certain route, it could cost you $100 a day back and forth."
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
I know it's crazy. You got to take a different route than that.
500 dollars.
I mean, that's what's the point of going to work?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. It's paying a babysitter and a caretaker to go to work.
I hear you.
You know,
and plus the gas. Listen, we don't have to do this right now, but yes, it's tough out there. There's no doubt about it. My days of $12 shrimp are long gone.
My treat, see, Mac.
Okay, well, listen, I'll take you up on it. I'm telling you right now, Rack, if I ever find myself in Saratoga, I'm going to the local.
Look me up.
I'm going right to the local watering hole, and I'm saying, point me in the direction of Rocco.
That's it. It's on me. No problem.
All right.
No problem. On me, see.
All right, so what do you got on the Knicks?
Okay, the Knicks. Come on. We got to close them out tonight. I don't want this to go. If we let Philly in, I don't want to let a crack open in the door that they think they could take us down. All right? Got to play them tough. Got to play them rough. We're at the Garden. The fans are going to be there for them, supporting our team. Right? John Starks is going to be rushing on the court.
John Starks is going to be there. You ain't kidding.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
John Starks is going to
be
there.
He's going to be slapping some butts.
No doubt. I wouldn't be surprised if John gets on his hands and knees and starts tying shoelaces. Like, he's just... John Starks is all about... Listen, And a couple people got... And thank you for the call, Rocco. I appreciate it. A couple people on Twitter got on me for my John Starks take. I'm not knocking John Starks. I love John Starks. And I'm not kidding. I love that he's so into this team. And I love the connection to those 90s teams, to seeing him out there. But it's just like... And someone said Spike does the same thing. Spike doesn't walk on the court. Like, you know, I don't know. Maybe he does. I know he stands up and applauds and everything. And obviously he got involved back in the day with Reggie Miller, which was awesome, but I don't think he steps on the court and walks like up to the players and argues with the refs the same. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he does. Definitely argues with the refs.
If a former Yankee was doing that on the sideline, even of a Knicks game, because obviously they can't do it their own sport, would you say a word?
If Tino Martinez was at a Yankee game and like stepped on the field and started yelling at an umpire, I don't know, maybe.
Even if there was like a Yankee fan who's a former Yankee player, huge Knicks fan, was at all these games, was on like doing the same exact thing as Starks, I don't think you say a word.
Well, I mean, it's not like I'm anti-Knicks.
How great is it to see him be there? The camaraderie, rooting for the Knicks.
It is great to see him be there. Just don't step on the court.
So when I was watching that game Sunday, I was watching the beginning of it with no sound, and I was like, who's this crazy? Because you see his back. I'm like, tell the Sixers fan to shut up. He's complaining for the fouls, whatever. Then they showed him. I'm like, oh, wait, never mind.
It's Starks. I mean, listen.
He can do whatever he wants. Never mind.
He can do whatever he wants. I know. I love him. I do love him. I'll love him forever. I'll love everyone on the team. Rest in peace, Anthony Mason. I loved Anthony Mason. Charles Oakley, who was, I guess, making comments in the news recently talking about the difference between Jordan and LeBron. What else did he say? He said something. I got to go back. He said something else that was more relevant than the Jordan-LeBron conversation. I forget what it was. Oh, he would have punched and beat in the face. That's what he said. After he pulled down
It's amazing because almost anybody else who says that, you roll your eyes, but with Oak. No, he would have.
He would have done it.
Might have been the easiest thing he did to Embiid.
That's true. Well, yeah, no, he would have.
Would have done a lot worse.
He would have done a lot worse when he hopes the refs weren't looking, yeah. But it's a huge game for the Knicks. They don't have any fallback. I know it's 3-1. I understand that it's not a do or die. I understand there is a tomorrow they lose this game. I do not want to go back to Philadelphia. I don't want to go back to Philadelphia having them get off the deck, win this game, going back to a city that's embarrassed and a fan base that's embarrassed and that you breathe life. And that building probably would be crazy. I understand that maybe some tickets have already been sold. I don't know. They're looking to make money on a team they don't believe in anymore, and the Knicks fan has shown they are more than happy to pay the difference because it's still cheaper than getting in the Garden and for a quick travel for 2 hours or whatever. But I don't want to play that game. This is an important game for the Knicks. End it now. Move on. Get ready for what looks to be the Indiana Pacers, and get ready for a road that you should be able to take to the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't want to, for Boomer to count the money, which, by the way, congratulations to Boomer re-upping here at the Fan. I'm thrilled about it. We all know how important he is to the station, so thank you, Boomer. We love you. Glad to have him back on board, CBS Network, all of it. He's out at the NFL today, which is going to be different. I mean, forever. And I got to admit, I grew up loving Phil Simms. That was my father's favorite player. First jersey I ever had, baseball, football, basketball, anything. First jersey I ever had was a Phil Simms jersey. I had it for way too long. The ones were completely falling off. It was a disaster, but I wouldn't get rid of it. Love my Phil Simms jersey. So I love Phil Simms. And while I do think, you know, I still think that him and Boomer were some of the fun, you know, the lady glasses, the whole thing. I still think it was fun to see Phil Simms there. And it's not going to be the same without Boomer. I mean, Simms was in the booth for so many years and has only been with NFL Today since Tony Romo. So what, 5 years maybe? But it's going to be different. It's going to be different. And he'll be missed, no doubt. But he'll still be here, and he'll have weekends free during the football season. He can do all the fun stuff that we all do. He can go apple picking, right? He can drink apple cider and go apple picking, all that fun stuff. He'll have time, and especially if he's got grandkids. Oh, take the grandkids out for those fall things to do. You go to all those places and apple cider donuts. At least that's up by me. I know Warwick, where I live, is like apple country. But so I associate that with fall now. But all kinds of things. Maybe, you know, Halloween trick-or-treating with the kids. All kinds of things he's open to now. So God bless. Happy to still have you here. We're strong. We're united. We're the Fan. 877-337-6666. All right. 1 hour down. Two more to go. We'll get into the Knicks a little bit more, our lousy baseball teams. And again, the report I heard this morning when I was, you know, waking up three or four times because I couldn't sleep straight again today. I thought I'd fixed it with a shower and going to bed late. Nope. Tossing and turning all morning long. And I saw a report from the New York Giants that I don't believe for one second.